We're going to continue from where we left off last time. That was in the Mishnah on Chaf Gimel Beis, Mishnah 23b in Erechin. Before we continue on Chaf Dalam and Aleph, we have to give a quick recap of what it says in the Mishnah. The halacha is, the rule is, that when someone cannot afford to pay their Erech, contrary to the standard halacha, standard rules when someone can't afford to pay a loan, if someone cannot afford to pay an Erech, someone cannot afford to pay a donation that he made, specifically by Erechin over there, there is a concept called that there is almost like declaring bankruptcy, that we see how much you can afford, we assess how much you can afford, and everything that you can't, you pay what you can, and anything more than that, you get off scot-free. By a typical loan, it doesn't work like that. By a typical loan, you are obligated to pay up your entire loan, and if you can't afford to pay it now, you'll be obligated to pay it over time. By Erechin, it doesn't work that way. By Erechin, we see how much you could pay, and anything more than that, you get off for. Now, to defining what you can afford, at least relevant to Erechin, the Mishnah says that it doesn't only include, you know, we take obviously all the liquid assets that you have, all cash that you have, take all property that you have, we'll even take all, you know, your pots and pans, whatever we can sell. However, there are things that are necessary for basic living, and those things will still remain by the donor. The Gemara says, "My Taima, why is this so that we allow the donor to keep all the items that he needs for life?" The Damar Kra, the Pasuk says, "V'imach hu me'arkecha." Literally, it translates, "If he's too poor to pay up his erech." However, the Gemara makes a drasha as follows. It says, "V'imach, if he's poor, hu me'arkecha." We tell him to live off of that which is left over from his erech. We tell him to live off the remainder, the stuff that we do not take. And from there we say, Hachyeo me'arkecha, let him live off of his erech, let him live off of the items that we do not take to pay off for his donation. The Mishnah continues on. The Mishnah says, Avoloi le'ishtel uvanav, that we do not give money for his wife or for his clothes, for his wife or for his children. So my taima. Why is it so? Why is it that we do not allow him to, we don't let him keep the cash to pay up for his wife and children's food as well? The Pasuk says, the Gemara says from the same Pasuk, Hu me'arkecha. We say, if he's poor, then who? Let him live off of his erech. Let him live off of the remainder, that which we do not take, for his erech. But the Pasuk says, who? He. Specifically him. We allow him to live off of that which we do not take for his erech, and as opposed to his wife and children, for them, we do not allow them to live off of that which did not take for the erech. Rabbi Eliezer says, "Imhaya ikar nesin leit simday." If he was a farmer, we let him keep his pure of oxen. The Rabbanan. It sounds like this is only the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. It's only the opinion of the minority. However, the majority disagree with him. They would say that we do not allow him to keep his pure of oxen. Why is that so? They say, "Hani lav kli umnis nenu alin achasim nenu." Those are not considered like tools of tools of a craftsman. We don't call them items that are necessary for his work. Rather, they're nechasim. They're just assets. So again, the halacha is, just to repeat over the halacha in the Mishnah, the halacha in the Mishnah is that in addition to, say, food and clothing, we also allow a craftsman to keep the tools that he needs for his trade. So over there, the Rabbanan say that the oxen used by a farmer for plowing, those aren't absolutely necessary, and therefore they're not considered the tools of a craftsman. Rather, they're considered like assets, things that he has to make his life easier so he doesn't have to pull the plow himself. But since they're not absolutely necessary, therefore we will confiscate, we'll take those away and give those to Hakdash. So the Mishnah says that we allow the craftsman two sets of tools. So let's just say he is a carpenter. We'll allow him a saw and a hammer. We won't only allow him one saw and one hammer, but we'll allow him also a second saw as backup and a second hammer as backup. The Mishnah says, let's say he had three saws and one hammer. Over there, we'll tell him that you got to sell one of your saws. You already have three saws, got to sell one of them. One hammer, we look at him, we say, listen, you were doing perfectly fine with one hammer until now. We do not allow you to buy a second hammer. So the rules by a craftsman are that, you know, if the craftsman only started off with one saw and one hammer, we don't give him extra money to buy a second one. Similarly, if a craftsman started off with three saws and a hammer, we tell him, sell one of your saws and live with just one hammer. So the Mishnah says, Pshita, This is obvious. That's obviously logic should dictate as such. The same way he was good until now, he should be good from now on also. The same way he was perfectly fine with one hammer until now, he should be able to do perfectly fine from now on with just one hammer. The Gemara says that no, I would have thought to say, until now, the Havale Lashule, that he had extra, he had a spare saw to lend out, have a Mushlile. So then people would lend to him. Meaning that if his hammer is out of service for whatever reason, over there he could go over to his next door neighbor, the other carpenter, and say, can I borrow your hammer? And they'll say, fine. Why would they say fine? Because they know that when their saw broke 2 weeks ago, or if their saw breaks in 2 weeks from now, you always have an extra saw. So you could always lend out your saw. Because he has three, meaning that there's one that's extra, he has the ability to lend it out. And as a result of that, now he could kind of fill the void that when he needs a second hammer, when he needs a backup for the tool that he's missing, he could borrow. But now, now that you confiscated his saw, you donated his saw to Hakdish, so he doesn't have a spare saw to lend out, now people are not going to lend to him, and therefore he doesn't have the ability to survive with just one hammer. You got to give him a second hammer. So I would think that by over here, even though he was perfectly fine until now with one hammer, the only reason why he was fine is because he had three saws. Now that he's down to two saws because we confiscated one, we have to give him money to buy a second saw. Kamash Malan. For that, the Mishnah says that no, we do tell him that if you were fine until now, got to live with just one hammer from now on. The Mishnah says, Hamakdish es nechasav. Someone says, I want all my possessions, all my property to go to Hakdish. Manon lai tefillin, the halacha is that you got to give him, the donor has to collect the money, raise the money in order to buy back off his tefillin. Even his tefillin become Beis HaMikdash property, he's got to buy it off of the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara brings out a story, Ahu Gavra, there was that person, Dizavninu l'nichse. He sold all his property. So he signed on a paper. It says, everything I own now goes to you. Then, Asala Kameh de Rav Yemer. He came to Rav Yemer. Amar lo. He told the people standing next to him, Sliku le tefillin. Go take off his tefillin. This guy, he sold all his, everything he owns, including everything he owns, is his tefillin. So the Gemara asks that, my kamash malon, why do I need to say over the story? Why does this story bear repeating? Masnisani, that it seems to be exactly the same halacha as our Mishnah, and that the Mishnah says, Hamaknish lechasav man leitfilin. The Mishnah says that if someone donates all his property to Hekdesh, then we take his property and you got to give him everything to Hekdesh, including his tefillin. And when he wants to wear his tefillin, he has to now go and pledge, he's got to go pay to buy his tefillin off of Hekdesh. Why would I think in our case where a person sold all his property is different than someone who donates all their property? Obviously, the tefillin are included in the sale, the same way they're included in the donation. The Gemara says, no, I would have said, Hasam hu desavar mitzvah ka'avidna. In the case of our Mishnah, the person says he's doing a mitzvah, he's donating his property to Tefillin. He says to Hekdesh, he's donating all his property to the base of Mikdash. When a person donates and he's doing a mitzvah, he does it right, and therefore he intends to donate everything. Avalinyan zvuni, but when we're dealing with a sale, mitzvah de gufe le zavin inish. People feel that something that's a mitzvah, and not only is it a mitzvah, it's a mitzvah that actually uses the body. Tefillin is laid directly on the arm. It's a mitzvah that's a very personal mitzvah. It's very near and dear to people. Therefore, when people have a sale, they're including their, everything that they own, but not tefillin. Tefillin is very personal. Obviously, it's not included in the sale. For that, kamash malan, that's why we say over the story of Rav Yemer that tefillin also would be included in the sale, and therefore he now has to go and buy back his tefillin. That is the end. Now we're on to a new mission. The mission says as follows. Echad hamakdish nechasav. Whether the person we're discussing is someone who donated all his property, v'echad hamarech atzmai, or someone who pledges to pay his own value and now you have to actually go and sell his stuff. Ein lai b'ksus ishtai, he does not have a right, and therefore Hekdesh, as a result, does not have a right, not over the clothing that belongs to his wife, v'loi b'ksus banav, and not to his son's clothing. So if, they will go into his closet and start selling his clothing. They won't go into his wife's closet or his children's closet and sell their clothing since it's not his. He doesn't have a right to donate that to Hekdesh. V'loi b'tzava, not only that, but not even, he can't even go and he doesn't even have a right over the dyed clothing that was shetzava lishma. That was dyed for them. Meaning, it's a little bit more of a practical example. If his wife has a dress that's being custom made by a tailor, so over there, one could have argued that that dress doesn't belong to her until she starts wearing it. So long as it's still in the tailor shop, so long as they're trying to figure out, you know, they're still working on it, and even once it gets picked up from the tailor shop, until she actually starts wearing it, that's not hers yet, and therefore it's his. And Hakdash has a right to go over to it. The Mishnah says no. Even something that was just made for her, so long as it was made for her or made for her or made for his children, the second that he decides that he's making it for them, that's already theirs. And similarly, v'lei b'sal sandalin chadashim shelakol nishmat, and also shoes, brand new shoes. Once you buy those shoes for your wife, you buy those shoes for your children, even though that those shoes were never worn, they were never acquired by her. Once, if they're purchased for her, that's enough to be considered her property, and the Beis HaMikdash has no right to go and collect his loan from her property. Now the Mishnah moves on. Afal Pisha Amru, even though they said that Avadim Nimkarim B'Ksuson Lishvach, that a Eved is sold in his clothing for a higher value. We'll see what that means in a second, that a slave is sold for more in his clothing. Meaning, if you take the avid, you take the slave, and when you're selling him, you dress him up in $30 worth clothing, he's worth $100 more. So it's got a lot to do with the packaging. The way that you package a slave increases his value. So therefore the packaging, so to speak, the clothing that he's wearing is only worth $100. But through $100 clothing, you could increase his value by $500 because you increase his value through the packaging. So even though we say that, v'chein, and similarly a para, a ox or a cow, imamtinin isol itlis, if you bring him to the marketplace, or you waited until the market day, mishubachasi, that means that if I go try to sell a cow, typically in the times of the Gemara, market days were Mondays and Thursdays. If I try to sell the cow off market, it'll decrease its value more than, it'll decrease in its value. The on market value is worth more than the off market value. So you try to sell a cow on Tuesday, you're selling it off market, it's got a lower value than on market day. But you could wait around 2 days. V'chein margalus, similarly a precious stone. In Malin Isol Krach, if you bring it to a large city, so over there, Mishubachas, it increases its value. So here we got a few different ways to increase the value of an item. Number one is the packaging. If I spend a little money on the packaging, you can significantly increase the value of the item you're selling. Option number two is if I take an item, I wait around. Now it's off season or off the market. If I wait till a market day, if I wait till a better day to sell, I could increase the value. Or alternatively, if I'm in a poor market here, but I go somewhere else for a better market. So if I'm trying to sell an expensive watch in a poor community, I'm less likely to receive its full value than selling it in a wealthier community. It makes all these things, even though these are all true, but when we're trying to assess the value for Hekdesh, we look at its time and place. So therefore, if we're trying to sell the expensive watch in the poor place, well, it's worth less. If I'm trying to sell, if I say assess my value, then we look at the way, at who I am and how much I'm worth. And similarly, by the cow, you look at the day it's being sold, even though it could fetch a higher price at a later date. Tanur Rabbanan. There's a well-known price. The price is as follows. V'nosana esa erkecha b'yoymahu. Pay the erech, pay his value on that day. Shaloi, from over here we see, you got to pay the erech based on that day. Shaloi yasha margolis l'kalin. Do not let a precious stone sit around for poor people, meaning that if it's sitting by poor people, don't say, wait, leave it around until we get to rich people. Rather, you pay for its true value. Kodesh LaHashem, And over here, the Gemara happens to throw in the next piece, Kodesh LaHashem, Stam HaKodesh Yis LeBedek HaBayis, Kodesh, when something is Kodesh, something is holy, it should be go for Hashem. From over here, we see that Stam HaKodesh Yis, regular HaKodesh Yis, regular donations, go LeBedek HaBayis, to go to maintenance of the Beis HaMikdash. We'll stop this year over here, Mitzvah Hashem. We'll continue on with another year in the brand new Perek, the Perek Shem Hadian, on the seventh Perek of Erechet.